Excused. Excused.
Representative Escobell. Representative Moniz. Representative Nicholas. Representative Stubson. Representative Wallace. Co-Chairman Harshman. Co-Chairman Bebap.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Bob, welcome. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'm Bob Jensen, the CEO of the Wyoming Business Council. With me today is Diane Joyce, our Chief Financial Officer, Ben Avery, who is the Director of our Business and Industry Division, and Molly Davies, who runs our Investment-Rated Communities Division. You have in front of you several items, the budget that details the 8% cut that we submitted to the governor that he recommended to you, as well as the summary of the 600 and 900 series that was requested. And then finally, there was also a request from your December meetings regarding an item in the governor's budget for a replacement of $5 million in the fund that goes to support data center infrastructure investments. So if you mind, just go to the budget document on page 3, and it details the overall budget submission of the Business Council. What you'll see there is some relatively small cuts in our overall budget, with one larger cut that makes up our 8%, and that larger cut is in the Community Facilities Grant Program that's administered by the Investment-Rated Communities Program. We discussed this with the governor as well as the folks from the Joint Minerals Committee. You'll remember that, Senator Rebout. And that basically is our budget submission for your consideration.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Go through the reductions and talk about them, would you please?
Sure. There's three basic sections of the Business Council budget. First of all, the overall Business Council budget. That is budget is starts out at $28 million, reduces by just over $143,000. It's mostly in travel related things and some contracts. Goes to a little under $27,962,000. The next item is the Main Street budget. It's started out at just under $1.8 million, and that cut is also in those same types of categories, and it moves down to just $1,781,000. And again, the bulk of the cut is in the Investment-Rated Communities program. Through the two main state-funded programs there are the Business-Ready Communities Program and the Community Facilities Program. The Community Facilities Program came after the development of the Business-Ready Communities Program, and it is charged with helping communities utilize either surplus schools or other surplus government buildings to enhance their community's quality of life and quality of place by repurposing those facilities for community use. Some examples are the community center in Saratoga, the community center in Warland. There's a community center here in Cheyenne, an old school redone in Laramie. There's been several of these throughout the state that have utilized this program. It's a $3 million cut in the program, taking it from $8.5 million to about $5.5 million.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. I'm trying to find in the supplemental budget number of employees.
We have
and
about...
Tell me what page I'm having trouble finding it. A couple places where I thought it should be, I can't find it. Tell me the page it's on, would you please?
Okay. I'm told it's on page 5.
That's what I looked at.
It's right at the end of the, right towards the bottom there. We have 50 staff and 5 part-time.
Oh, there it is. Okay, the question, what I want to talk about a little bit, the first thing we've been doing, Bob, is biennializing and seeing what the effect is. So, Don, what's your opinion on this one?
Mr. Chairman, on this one, I have no issues relative to the math that works out to the biennialization. The vast majority of their cuts are taken from a grant program, and there's sufficient funds in there to not only cover this biennium, but if it needed to be doubled, the cut for next biennium, that line item could absorb that. And I would also note, relative to the positions, while it is included in their narrative, recall that the legislature does not appropriate or authorize specific positions for this agency. They are given a latitude, like community colleges and the university, to set their level.
Okay. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that program. You know, one of the things that, you know, across the board cuts and some of those things, we don't really like to do that, but you're taking a pretty good hit to this particular program. And if we do the 8% cuts the next go around, which is real and will be happening, and so then you're going to take more out of this program. And even after what Don said, that there's still some funds left, is it time to talk about eliminating this program?
Senator Bebout, I think that that's a discussion that we could have. I wouldn't recommend having it right now. I would see what happens in the rest of this biennium and see what the utilization of the program is. We had talked to the Minerals Committee about some modifications to the program that we thought would make it more efficient. The Minerals Committee didn't agree with that. And so what we're seeing is that there's a lot of interest in the use of this program, but it's not directly tied to economic development infrastructure like the Business Ready Communities program is. So it's while it's important in terms of its impact on overall economic development for communities in terms of community development and what that means towards issues related around quality of life and how people that work in businesses in communities around the state feel about the communities that they live in and work in, it's not as directly tied to capital investment and job creation as the Business Ready Communities program is. That's why we took it out of this instead of the Business Ready Communities program. We feel like while it's a valuable program, it's a little lower on the priority list than maintaining the investment capacity of the Business Ready Communities program.
As I understand this program, typically it would be a situation, and you could take, I guess, a school that we were building a new school, and there was a desire by the local community to go in and salvage that for another use, and so the money's put in there to try to refurbish that school and try to have to do something else in the community. Is pretty accurate?
That's exactly what it is, Senator.
And so how much have we been doing? What are some numbers in that regard? And then the thing that I hear a lot about is we do these things, and then there's never anything provided for the maintenance. And sometimes there are... They'd just soon not even have the money that we spent to do it because they're stuck with a bill to maintain it and the uses aren't there.
Excuse me just a second, Senator.
Sure.
The total for Senator Bebout, the total that has been awarded under this program since inception is just under $47 million. It's almost in every county. To your point about operations and maintenance, one of the criteria that we use for evaluating these projects is the applicant's commitment and demonstrated capacity to carry forward with operations and maintenance 5 years into the future.
And this is strictly a grant. There are no matching requirements, so that it vary situation by situation.
No, there, Senator Bebout, there is a match requirement. Is it... It's 15%.
15%. I guess, and I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, but, you know, as we go into these kind of austere times and what we're talking about, and I think the Business Council does an excellent job of what it's really intended, at least for my feelings, is to business development, create jobs and opportunities. And when we had extra money, these kind of programs were something we could look at. But now that we're looking at some, you know, we're just not going to have the money we used to have, maybe this is one that certainly we're going to continue to pare down, but maybe we just don't need it anymore. And if I had my druthers, I'd sure want to look at creating jobs and opportunities rather than putting money in this if it was an either or. And we may very well come to that decision, Bob. So I think I'm not prepared to tell you that today and have the legislation move forward. But I think that's a real possibility. And I guess, you know, you're working with the Minerals Committee, and maybe we'll think about it a little bit more, how we might want to proceed. But I'd like to take a serious look at whether we really need this when given what's going on. And I sure don't want to take money from the other things you do where I think it's really helping our state. And maybe this one isn't quite high on the priority list as the others. Obviously, it's not, or you wouldn't have taken the money out of it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that, like I said, I think that it makes sense to take a look at it maybe for the next budget to see what the utilization of the program continues to be. And I don't, you know, while it isn't, in our view, at the same priority level as the investments that we're able to make in business-related infrastructure that drives capital investment and job creation. It still is important to consider that in all aspects of economic development, certainly business development is a key piece of that, but community development is important in that as well. People don't live in business parks, and they need to have a feeling of a pride about the communities that they live in. And this program helps those communities that prioritize that as something that's important to their community, helps them get those kinds of projects done. So while it may well be that it isn't a priority anymore and it does need to be defunded, I guess you make those decisions, but I wouldn't suggest doing that at this point in time.
Well, I would expect you to make a good argument in favor of it. But just one second, Drew. But I just seriously think that when I look at the importance of the Business Council and quite frankly, the excellent job you do, and I can go all around the state and talk about where things were happening. And I guess as you're thinking about this and pondering it, I need more tangible stuff rather than a good feeling about it and how you think it helps the community. And maybe, and I'm sure we'll hear from some communities, and I'm both pros and cons, but let's be serious about taking a hard look at this. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to remember. It seems like I remember this program when we put it out there. It was probably 5 or 6 years ago. It's a legislative-directed program that was, as we embarked on substantial school construction, that the object was to be able to maintain some of those because we recognized that some of these schools had kind of become community center gathering points, and so as we built new schools to allow communities the opportunity to do this. And so that was my recollection was that was a legislative directed thing that simply your office was tasked mm-hmm. with, as opposed to something that you guys had recommended. Do I remember that right?
Senator Vivaut, Senator Perkins, that's basically right. It was at a time when the uptick in investment in capital construction for schools was huge, and there was this sort of trend out there to just sort of bulldoze them. And particularly in smaller communities, it was kind of became a little scary for them because the schools had been the places where, you know, you had celebrations, weddings, funerals, that kind of thing. And so that was the impetus for it. We will get you the kind of information that you're looking for, but it was legislative directed. It was started in 2006, and it's done what it was intended to do in our view.
Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up.
Sure.
And so, and I guess that's the other question. Now that it's been in existence for 6 years, and I guess the question is do we have any idea of the inventory of potentials that are out there? Is this something that just kind of crops up, or do you have a list of people that are waiting to do these types of things? Or in the end, you know, at some point, you've developed all the community schools you're going to develop, and so, you know, at some point, you would anticipate this program would run its course. And I'm just wondering if we have any way to determine if we're where we are in that spectrum as we go, because maybe it's absolutely right. Maybe it's done everything it's supposed to do, and it's something that we don't need to worry about anymore.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we do, you know, as much as we can, sort of a what's in the pipeline kind of analysis. And we talk to our regional directors, we talk to local economic development people, local chambers, community officials, and that kind of thing. Right now, it looks like we have a pipeline of about $12 million out there of projects that could come forward. Now, when we talk about that, you know, not all of those will, and some that we don't know about might. But that's generally the number, and we usually have more at, when we talk about that sort of pipeline analysis than we have budget for.
And I don't know if you know, but my guess is that as we look at those opportunities for these communities to do that, I would suspect that a lot of times that even their 15% comes from various consensus money that's provided to local governments. Would you know about that? And I guess my other question would be, as you look at consensus money, is that something that is kind of this could be a substitute, and this potentially could be a little bit of a duplication in that regard.
Bob, Senator Bebo, Senator Perkins, it comes from all kinds of different sources, and it's not only in a lot of cases they come up with more match than the 15%. But sometimes it does use consensus money, but I wouldn't say that it's all consensus money.
Can you, Mr. Chairman, just to, while you're on that same question, bring us back, when you bring us information kind of on those projects, kind of show us the match on that. I guess we'd be interested to know that, how much of it is that consensus money in that 15%. Thanks.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we have to look at, too, is what other programs this dovetails into, and perhaps we have savings in our school facilities where you may have a community, if they know their option is to remodel an existing school for three times as much as what it would be to build a new school, or build a new school and remodel the old school for a community center, the state overall could be saving considerable amount of funds. Because it's in almost every case it's more expensive to remodel an old school to the standards. If you get it to the standards that, say, we remodel Natrona, that was substantially higher than what it would be just to bulldoze it and put in a new school. So you're going to have a need to look at some of these communities. We'll say, okay, well, this program is no longer around, so maybe we're going to tend toward keeping the cultural heritage alive by remodeling the existing building, and that would essentially cost the state more in the long run. So we need to do some of that benefit cost analysis and substitution analysis between school facilities and this current program before we decide to eliminate it. And I think that analysis would have to be made as an aggregate demand on the budget in its total. So, Bob, if we get to that point, you know, we may have some discussions, and that's something that I think that you should get with the school facilities folks and kind of dovetail the whole package, if you could. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, you talk about the pipeline. There's $12 million in it. What's the prioritized list? So if we reach that point where we say this is not a program we need anymore, who's promised out there, who's not?
Senator Bebout, Senator Dockstader, there's no promises.
So, Mr. Chairman, then at this point, then that all of those could be blocked, right?
Potentially.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This year, the co-chairmen are assigning us all agencies, and you're one of my agencies that I'll be trying to present on the floor, and most of my questions have already been answered in the discussion, but I'm noticing that in a lot of these agencies, in every agency I think, you have performance measures, and you have a list of things that you're measuring yourself by, but you don't say what how you're measuring up to your measures. And you don't need to do it right now, but I'd appreciate maybe you probably got it. You've probably sent it to me sometime in the past. But I would really appreciate you resending that to me so that I can talk about how you're doing in relationship to what your metrics are.
Be happy to do that.
Mr. Chair, is that Bob? Is that clear what we kind of asked you then? I mean, I heard some things. I mean, basically, I think we want to know what's been done in the past and how the match was done. I heard that. We want some performance measures. Was there anything else? I mean, I heard of some other stuff, but I didn't wasn't sure if that stuff you can deliver that to us. You have that data.
Yes, sir.
So just to add to that, it's not only what's been done, but I think we're looking at. What are the projects that you're aware of? Yeah, the pipeline. What's in the projects that you're aware of? I think that's the only other thing that I remember.
Representative Moniz.
I think my question was answered, but I was, Mr. Chairman, wondering if Bob could fill us in on what really is in the pipeline or what the pipeline really means.
Gas is in the pipeline. CO2 or natural or natural.
We have two potential projects in Sweetwater County, one in Uinta, one in Weston, two in Bighorn, two in Crook, one in Campbell. I didn't do the protocol right, I'm sorry, but
okay.
One in Johnson, one in Bighorn. I guess there's another one in Sweetwater and one in Carbon. And like I said, No telling whether or not any of those will come, or all of them, or if there's some that aren't on that list that might show up. So that's just the nature of it.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Just 1 second.
Okay.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, because I'm not sure I understand. Out of the facilities program, community facilities program, you took roughly 30%. And out of other areas, frankly, it looks like you nickel and dimed at $500 here, $600 there. Why not just take all of it out of that one? If you can stand to lose 30% out of it, why not just take, because you're only adding another $200,000 in there.
Good question, Senator Bebout. We wanted to take a look at our entire operation and have everybody go through it with a fine-tooth comb and see what areas they could make cuts in, and that's how we approached it.
Mr. Chairman.
Steve.
Mr. Chairman, two questions really tail on to Representative Burkhart's. Do you have any vacancies in those 50 positions right now? And
we have, Senator Bebout, Representative Harshman, we have two positions that we're looking at.
Okay.
And but this doesn't, does this 50 include those two? This 50 includes those two.
Includes those two.
Yeah.
And, well, maybe that'll, if we have to get into that next round, I'm sure, I mean, if you have less projects and less, you're going to need less folks probably. Question on back to the pipeline. There were several of those that you listed in several counties. Are those folks who've actually come to you that maybe this is it, or are these?
No, these
are just schools that are being vacated.
Not Senator Bebout, Representative Harshman. It's not all schools, and no, these aren't applications at this point in time. This is just conversations, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
How long have the two positions been vacant?
Oh, a couple months.
Just a couple months.
Yeah, if that.
Okay, and what's your position in terms of total employees now compared to like 6, 7, 8 years ago? Provide that to us with the other, if you would.
Okay.
Unless you know it off the top of your head.
Well, I think we were somewhere between 53 and 55, and now we're 50. So.
Okay. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jensen, just one more pipeline question. So we've got $5.5 million essentially left in community facilities after this reduction. Is any of that committed to date, and if so, how much of it is committed?
Senator Bebout, Representative Stubson, Could you ask that question again? Okay, none of it's committed at this point in time. And also, Molly just told me that of all these projects, you know, these, like I said, they're conversations, but they're working with our regional directors to try and, you know, move it forward if it will move forward.
I just wanted to make sure that we're, you know, I didn't want to be too vague on the pipeline question. I think what we're looking for in the pipeline question is just not what's in the pipeline, but where is it in the process? And if there's some way to, you know, granted, you know, I understand that some of your decisions and the conversation with your regional directors, but, you know, some of those people, my guess is some of those people that have had conversations will think that they have commitments. So when we get the pipeline, I think what we're looking for is not a bunch of information, but just, is that just been an idle discussion, or are they in the process of putting together an application, or where in that process is that? So when we look at that I think in the end what we're trying to make sure is we don't rip the rug out from underneath somebody who thought that they had a deal.
Senator Bebout, Senator Perkins, yeah, I understand that. We can make that distinction. What we're talking about is a cut to the current biennium, basically, and there's still money in the program. So there are projects that are under consideration right now of about a little over $5 million, but that's out of a total budget, including the 5.5 of 12.5. So that's carryover. Some of that's carryover.
So that was 7 in carryover? Mr. Chairman?
It's the total that we have right now in funding is $10.3 million.
Bob, I've got a question, too. It's under your 900 series, and I understand how the manufacturing works portion of what you do and how you work with the university, and I understand the IT with the university and what you pay them to do for you. I believe I understand that. What I don't understand for sure is the $1.5 million providing consulting services and assistance to small businesses. I think I understand that. What is it you write a check to the university? Would you explain that to me?
Senator Bebout, we have a series of partners that we work through the university, sometimes co-funded by the university, sometimes co-funded by the federal government. And this first one, the Small Business Development Center, is an agency that is co-funded by us, the university, and the Small Business Administration. And it's one of our main tools for working with existing businesses and startup businesses, helping them through, you know, deciding whether they want to be in business or deciding how they can expand their business. It's like you mentioned, Manufacturing Works is one of those. We call it the Business Resource Network, and it's our main way that we reach out to somewhere around 4,000 businesses a year on help and support for all kinds of things that that they run into.
So this is a two-year cost, roughly, and so is it like $4.5 million? You just divide it by three, and how do you figure out who's paying for what? And
SBDC. Well, they have a budget that they submit, and
to whom?
To us, and to SBA, and okay. To the university. And we have a contract with them to supply.
What is the percentage that we provide? About 50? Yeah.
SBA, on this particular one, SBA is roughly 50, and we're roughly 50 for the Small Business Development Centers. That's a program that's been around for a long time, and it's they've been good partners with us, and we just have over time always funded them at 50%.
And the main reason too is the SBA. Do you think their funding side is sufficient? They're going to continue to do that. Is it affected by the sequester or any of those kind of things?
I don't know, Ben. Do you have a feel for that?
We don't know how that's
going to be affected, but the percentage would still be about the same.
But if they don't have the money, then
well,
you'd have
they don't
to
have
pick
any
up
money.
Money.
I don't. I would be surprised if they were totally zeroed out.
Okay. Okay, committee. Anybody else have any questions? I guess on the information we want back, Don, are we clear on what we requested? And I don't think this requires a callback. I think when you get around to doing that, Bob, I think we'd appreciate it. I don't. Does this committee have any desire to move forward on the facility side now with some kind of a legislation to? I think it's a little premature to cut that program completely. Does anybody have any desire to do that at this time? Yeah, we just don't know. So I think just get that to us in a timely way, and that's kind of what we'll do then. Anything else? Thank you. Keep up the good work.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. What's the name of that project we're working on for nuclear? It's
We're open to contract with someone, Senator, Mr. Chairman, and committee, to do a study. There is one conversion facility.
Conversion, yeah, that's what it is.
In the United States, and it's over 50 years old. And since the majority of uranium in the United States is mined in Wyoming, currently through in situ operations now, which are very environmentally friendly, we are looking at contracting with a party to investigate the feasibility of building a new conversion facility, and if so, sited in Wyoming. It'll be a lot of work. It'll be maybe a year or so worth of work that would involve not only some of the engineering for it, but the cost estimate, and then the RPAS model on the economic benefits would tentatively cost probably between $800 million and $1 billion, so it's probably a third the size of these coal-to-liquids things we hear about, and would employ around 400 people, so the employment is still in the range of coal-to-liquids.
Yeah, committee, that's an exciting project, and real quick, like, you have the yellow cake that's in the barrels that they produce at these in-situ mines, but before you can have the enriched uranium, you have to have a conversion to what, U-235, I think is what it is, and then so you can have the conversion. And then they take that and ship it to the enrichment facilities for the fuel rods. It's a really interesting concept. What a great thing if we could move that forward. So good luck.
I just, Mr. Chairman, on that, we just finished all that work on that nuclear task force, and that was my question. How far up the enrichment food chain are you talking? I mean, is it to an oxide kind of level, or there's probably a couple levels, but. Maybe that's not even a. Maybe I'm getting the cart before the horse here a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harsman, the conversion facility, actually the mine has a contract with utility companies, and the utility company is the one that needs the fuel rods, and so the enrichment facility enriches it to a gas to the percentage component that the utility company needs.
Okay.
So it's actually then. Once it's enriched, it goes to the utility, and they're paying for the enrichment for the company to enrich it.
Yeah.
So it's not a Wyoming mine that's paying for the enrichment process. It's major utilities like Florida Power and all those. So. And I apologize that I was speaking earlier without a mic.
A couple of things that a few of us have been interested in is trying to add value to our Wyoming natural gas, and one is, I guess, turn it into some type of nitrogen fertilizer. And with Chesapeake around Douglas, I was wondering if a possibility of maybe getting with them, and I know Senator Anderson has some wishes to look at that too, and hoping that maybe we could get something set up with you, Bob. And then the other thing is looking at what we can do to maybe enhance manufacturing in the state too. And so those are things that maybe some discussions we could have in the next few days.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, just briefly, I know we're going over our time, but we're doing a lot of work with the university and with the Idaho National Lab in several categories of advanced technologies for natural gas, for coal, for uranium, even including wind. And we've done the hybrid energy system study that I think we're pointing towards a report to the Minerals Committee on, looks like, February 13th. And if you're interested in coming to that, I'm sure you'd be welcome to come to that. Specifically for natural gas, the conversion of natural gas to a liquid fuel or a chemical feedstock or fertilizer, for example, definitely is very possible and doable, as well as looking at ways that we can utilize liquefied natural gas in high horsepower applications, and we're working with industry on that as well. So there's a lot of activity going on with value added for all forms of energy that we're partnering with the university, Idaho National Lab, and industry on.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Senator Anderson, I noticed you're here. Is there anything you'd like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just interested in the conversation that we're engaged in at this minute, and you know the significance of uranium in Converse County. We've had some of these conversations in the past. Process that you're talking about now occurs in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. We'd like to bring that that type of process here. The other thing in regard to Senator Meyer's conversation, we're all interested in trying to market the most plentiful commodity of natural gas. Certainly, fertilizers, one, I'm currently in conversation with the Business Council to explore foreign markets for export and all that. So this is just all good things for Wyoming in regard to the how we position ourselves in the future. Two things, particularly with natural gas. We've got to either use the supplies that we have here to market or to make into fertilizer, whatever, or look for more distant markets. Our pipelines and things that we have built are now into areas that have their own gas, given fracking and things going on with different shales. So we need to look into the foreign markets. The council's been exceptionally helpful in that regard, and we'll continue to keep people posted in that. So there's just a lot of conversation in regard to the Wyoming product.
Yeah, and Senator Anderson, too, because of the, you know, you now being on the Minerals Committee, this really fits with the Minerals Committee. If there's something we need to do to get something more in some of these things to continue, boy, I'm all for it, too. These are good ideas. We need to have them run their course and see if they work. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tourism. We've got a few emails on tourism. Has anyone got any besides me?
No.
Anybody? How about you, Bob? You get any?
Then we need to cut it.
They said.
We were just talking about.
Well, there's Diane.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
And Dan, this is one of yours. Welcome. Good
thank
to see you.
Likewise.
And the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Diane Schober, and I'm the Director of Tourism for the state of Wyoming. And here in the audience is are the members of the Wyoming Tourism Board. They've been here for a meeting. We just conducted a lot of business today. Chairman Mark Kupke, Vice Chairman Renee Middleton, immediate past Chairman Clay Miller, Bruce Groready, Zanny Driscoll, Kerry Cooper, Sandy Newsom, Darren Rudloff, and Dave Hanks. And then also members of our staff that are here, Alan Dubberly, who is our Deputy Director, and Anita Benton, who is the Office and Business Manager. So, Mr. Chairman, you just want me to go through the budget presentation as we put it into writing. First of all, thank you very much for the time to explain to you what our marketing programs mean and what these reductions might mean in terms of impacts. 2011 was a great year for tourism. It's a $3 billion industry, generating $120 million in sales tax revenues. We don't have all the numbers in for 2012. But early indications and all of the benchmarks that we have as we go into it, it looks like we're going to see growth, if not modestly, at least some growth in the tourism economy for Wyoming. And I'm always encouraged when I get the information from the Economic Analysis Office that shows the tax collections of the leisure and hospitality industry showing positive growth. So our programs, as you know, are funded, and the purpose of our office is to create a compelling and dynamic marketing campaign to non-residents, driving them to consider Wyoming for their vacation destination. We are funded 100% through general funds, so we are at the mercy of this body and your colleagues in the House and the Senate for the funding mechanisms. And fortunately, we've been able to build a strong and effective program that does drive visitation. It's an economic driver for Wyoming, and tourism is an export industry. As we looked at the directive that was given to us from Governor Mead for the 8%, like all of my colleagues who are directors and who are facing reductions in their budgets, we had to look at all of our programs and see where we could make the reductions as required that would have minimal impacts. And there's not a point where you can't make something that doesn't have an impact. And what we came through our 8% based on the information from the budget office, our required 8% was $1,022,931. We actually have made recommendations for $1,023,000. Essentially, those can be broken up into really four bite-sized pieces of our budget. And I'll start with the certainly where we feel is the most important and having the greatest impact as we go through this is the majority of the reductions, $552,000, are in the forms of co-op marketing and participatory programs where the industry around Wyoming participates with us and makes financial contributions to lift and elevate the Wyoming message. And just to give you a quick idea of what this means in a year, in 2012, just in the advertising co-ops alone, we had 107 partners who invested in 234 different transactions. So they bought into co-op marketing opportunities 234 times. The partner investment total was $875,000. Our investment in those co-ops was $533,000. So with that marketing investment by partnering, we were able to have a $1.4 million reach just in those cooperative programs in advertising alone. And then we also rely on co-op partnerships through familiarization tours. And familiarization tours are predominantly when we're bringing in journalists, both domestic and internationally, as well as trade who are wholesalers and operators who are out there selling the product of Wyoming and the Wyoming vacation. And we had 14 domestic journalists in, 14 FAMs consisting of 32 journalists. We had 23 international FAMs consisting of 60 journalists. And the partners across the state spent just a little less than $50,000 supporting those media FAMs. In our trade shows, we had 74 partners participate with us at buying and selling trade shows for international and domestic buyers. We also have within that cooperative reduction in our sign grant program. And this was in 2005. We were able to get an appropriation through this body for $750,000 on a biennium to do highway turnouts and sign grant programs. And it was about building a visitor-friendly, easily accessible Wyoming. And as we've gone through budget reductions and other requirements in 2010 and now, this program is down to right at $200,000 on a biennium. But the important part about these programs that are, you know, wayfinding and visitor-friendly is it allows people when they're traveling across Wyoming to slow down just a little bit. And when we can keep people in Wyoming for a half an hour, which might lead to a half a day, which would lead to another day, we're driving the economy of tourism. And so there are reductions in that sign grant program that are in that would be have an effect on our ability to execute that. And then we also participate in consumer shows. And we do two consumer shows in Denver, Colorado RV and Boat Show, and the International Sportsman's Exposition. And we do the Salt Lake International Sportsman's Exposition. And we have, in last year, we had five partners, who individual destinations who participated. Some of them participated more than once. So there were overall between those three shows 10 partnership opportunities, and they contributed nearly $10,000 into that. And, you know, when I'm talking about these partners, I'm not talking just about the destination drivers of Yellowstone or Grand Teton National Park or Teton County. but Evanston and Sweetwater County and Hot Springs County and, you know, folks all across the state who are participating in these co-ops. A cooperative model is not anything that's out of the ordinary for how destination marketing organizations do their business. And the reason why it's not just exclusive to Wyoming is because it works. And it's a way that, you can leverage your budget and maximize, you know, that reach with it. The other components, essentially, of the...
Just one second, I'm Senator Meyer.
Now, these are all areas where you've leveraged your budget and you've gotten partners, and even though they're effective, I guess you've made a decision that they're not effective as direct advertising in other markets, and that's why, or you may not have any leverage of your budget at all, so you decided to spend the money where you have no leverage and take the money out of your budget where you have leverage. Is that what I understand?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, when we looked at these and had to evaluate these, it was we wanted to keep the core message of the overall main advertising program in place. That's what really drives the greater visibility. And then there are a multitude of other things that support and lift that overall messaging up. A public relations program, these trade shows, meeting face-to-face. I mean, there's, you know, all of this other support that goes into it. And so as we looked at those programs, we had to say, where can we take pieces of each of those and reduce it? I do want to be, in fairness to all of you so you understand, we're not completely eliminating the co-op marketing programs. We're making a reduction in those co-op marketing programs. But because those are areas where you can extend partnerships and build them up, those are the areas where we felt that we could make the cuts and, have the least effects on our own budget. But yet it is when I visited with Governor Meade about this particular component of our reduction, I did tell him, I said, this is the one that will have the greatest impact across the state of Wyoming, because it is about the partnerships. And, you know, it's a program that, fortunately for us, for our agency, because we're a marketing agency, we rely on that interaction to a great extent with every destination across Wyoming, so that we can build out, you know, itineraries and things to do. And people are coming into Wyoming via an automobile, and if they're headed to Yellowstone, they're coming in all kinds of different routes, and we want them to know what they can see and do along the way. And this gives a lot of those destinations, even the smaller ones, an opportunity to participate by offering co-op programs.
But Mr. Chairman, I guess the follow-up, I guess your answer would be, is that yes, it's you get a bigger bang for your agency dollar by spending it in areas that don't have leverage to your agency dollar and your core advertising program.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I hope I'm understanding clearly what you're saying is these are advertising components that are, if we had more money, we would expand the program because these have value and they're good for us. If you have less money, it's a choice, you know, that we made. They still provide, all of these advertising opportunities have returns for us because we measure that. And the partnerships with the industry, the reason why they continue to partner with us and continue to invest is because they're getting a return on it as well. And so it's just a matter of prioritizing is where it comes down to.
And that's what I'm trying to get at, Mr. Chairman, is that your priority is to spend it in your core advertising. And it's to take it away from the leveraged efforts that you have with whether it's communities or other entities.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, yes.
Okay.
Ultimately, yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Dockstetter.
Diane, you are done, right?
I have just a few more things in there, but I want to...
I assumed there was a little more.
There's a few more things on there.
Okay. We're just trying to move it along,
okay.
But go ahead.
Well, there are only three other components that I wanted to highlight for you in the reductions. One is in a public relations media program that we have utilizing Wyoming professional athletes, rodeo athletes, called Team Wyoming. It's our cowboy marketing program. And, Mr. Chairman, you had a chance to see a little piece of what we're doing with that program in December. When we were at the NFR, but we are making some reductions in that program, $118,000. We also have reductions of $213,000. Some of it's coming through some natural selection of we were able to lower expenditures for postage. We've had a lot of an increase in some of our digital downloads of guides, although at the end of the year things are spiking back up. So, but that's just in some administrative costs. And then $140,000 in other overall operations and miscellaneous travel and savings, you know, smaller units and pieces where we could save. So that's in those elements. Those are the broad sweeping components of the reductions.
Okay. Okay, now,
Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to pick up a little time here with the questions, expedite them. I got two or three, four here. But 24 full and part-time students, you really didn't, or part-time employees, you really didn't distinguish how many of each, how this compares to about 5 to 10 years ago in your department?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, we have three permanent part-time staff, and the rest are full-time employees. And in the 10 years that I have been here, we've added two staff that we went through the requisition here through the Joint Appropriations or through the legislative process for approval. And then in 2 years ago, in that biennium budget, this body supported the addition of four staff members for the Northeast Wyoming Welcome Center, two full-time and two part-time, two full-time part-time. And so those have been the additions to our staff.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your areas of sales and marketing, they're listed, but are they prioritized? We've got six of them.
Excuse
me? Is it possible to prioritize your areas of sales and marketing?
Dan, speak more into the mic.
You list six of them, okay, on page four. Are any of them more important than the others?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dockstetter, the elements that are certainly at the core of everything we do is the advertising and the research. I mean, that's, you know, what we're here to do is to get a message out there about the state of Wyoming and all the things that you can do when you're considering coming here for a vacation. And so it you know, accounts for the large portion of what's in our budget, and it certainly would be the highest priority of the items that we do. And it's successful because it's supported with other programs that are, that's the reason why we have the other areas.
Then finally, if I could please, you talk about sponsorships, and they are cut back under contract services. But is that something you truly see any type of direct benefit from?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dockstetter, we might not see a direct benefit in all of those that we do. Now, some of them we do directly. We'll monitor and be able to see some. Others are about building programs and helping some things get off the ground. We've done a lot of things through the college national finals rodeo, the high school finals rodeo, where we've supported those programs for audience development. So it's not about, you know, the scholarships or things, but it's about advertising campaigns to draw an audience in. We've also done sponsorships through our film office for film festivals across the state of Wyoming and film competitions, and those you can directly see because we know, you know, what we're getting back, because those are more of a trade, direct to a trade versus a direct to a consumer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have one, John?
Yeah, I was trying to yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, kind of dovetailing on some of Senator Dockstetter's, you know, you have the different types of advertising. Do you have a sense for us at all, or do you know, you know, like a bang for buck, you know, what you get back in return in, for the different types of advertising as to tourism, as to relates to tourism dollars to the state?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hussert. Yes, we do. We require.
You do?
We do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We have those every year. We do independent analysis, not by our advertising agency, but we have an independent firm that goes out and tests and monitors. It's done in waves. It's done in the spring when the ads are running, and it measures recall and how well the awareness building goes. And then in the fall, there's wave two, which is done as follow-up, and it talks about then conversion and how many incremental trips did those advertising messages drive to the state of Wyoming, what was the average trip expenditure, what was the ROI. We look at it every year. Obviously, the goal is to keep things going up so that we're driving more incremental travel. But, yes, we do. And it's part of a benchmark that's in the performance measures of our advertising agency.
Mr. Chairman.
One more. Go ahead.
Yeah, is that something that, you know, you could provide us just out of curiosity? And you have, you know, could you tell us, like, what is the best and what, you know, is best form of advertising that you get the best return on?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hastert, the television is by far the strongest, most heavy-hitting medium. It still is. It still performs very well for us, and you know, we maintain a very high level of awareness. And then also, you know, part of that is not only do they like the ads, but does it cause a consumer to say, I'm going to act, I'm going to go to the website, I'm going to start shopping for this trip to Wyoming, and then will I actually book it? And then, you know, we call print, like magazine advertising and television advertising, sort of the muscles. They're the heavy lifters, and they're really bold in building awareness. And then online and social and other things are really good at more short-term, quick messaging, more off-the-beaten-path things. And so you have to first get them aware of Wyoming, and then you start moving the consumer into other more detailed information.
Mr. Chairman, just two other things. Does the your office, the tourism office, do you guys advertise, and I'm going to probably assume you do, but I just was curious, are, you know, the great hunting and, I mean, to encourage folks to come here and hunt and fish and things like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, not on hunting because it's limited in terms of out-of-state, you know, limited number of licenses, but we certainly do on the fishing opportunities. And we also... you know, are very, very supportive of the non-consumptive use of Wyoming's wildlife. It comes back in all of our research about what visitors enjoy is, you know, wildlife and that they would not normally see. So I would say that we have a very good relationship with the Department of Game and Fish. Hopefully Director Talbot will say the same thing when he comes in here after us. But, yeah, we work together with them where it's appropriate.
The last one, Mr. Chairman, is... the tourism center that we built, how is that working out, and what kind of usage are you seeing?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hastert, well, first of all, thank you very much for the years, those of you that have been in the legislature that passed the appropriation to build that. It's a beautiful facility, and we are having a lot of visitors there. I don't have the exact numbers, so I can't share those with you. I know right now during these winter months we're certainly seeing a lot of locals who are coming in and bringing their families, and I'll be extending an invitation to all of you at any time through the session if you would like to come out and take a look at it. I know some of you were there last year for the Hard Hat Tour. Mr. Co-Chair was there as one of the members who went through it, and in its final state, it's really a beautiful piece, and I think we're going to see some really good return on that investment.
Just a second. Let's see if any House members.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm asking this of all of the agencies that I've been assigned to, and that is that you've got performance measures. You've only got a couple, but it sounds like you're measuring lots of more things from the previous discussion. Mm-hmm. But those performance measures that you do have, you list what you're measuring, but you don't tell us how you're doing. So if you could provide me with that, you probably sent it to me before, but I'd appreciate it here. And then I have a Mr. Chairman, I have a specific question about your cowboy marketing program. I noticed in your handout that you mentioned that it's going to affect support for high school and college as well as the pro rodeo stuff. So I'm curious, what are you doing with high schools and colleges, and how is that contributing to the effort to get tourists to come to Wyoming?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wallace, well, we're not working directly with high schools or colleges in forms of, you know, this marketing program. In the budget, when I was talking about the cowboy marketing program, we were pulling some things out of it's the support of those, the finals, the National High School Finals Rodeo and the College National Finals Rodeo. So we supported the local Convention and Visitors Bureau's efforts to advertise and draw an audience. But one thing I will say about this team of athletes that are part of the Cowboy Marketing Program, many of you have met them. They're usually at the legislative reception that's held during the Governor's Conference on Tourism. And you know, they're it's all men, and they're just a really fine group of men. And they've done a lot of you know, public outreach for us, and working with kids and special rodeo, and I'm just really proud to have them wearing the Wyoming brand and being ambassadors for us. And, you know, it speaks volumes when we're promoting ourselves as the Cowboy State and under the brand of Wyoming Forever West. And part of delivering on that promise is you know, allowing the visitor to actually see and meet some of the things that they would associate with Forever West, and one of those is our cowboys. And so it's been a good program.
And then finally, Mr. Chairman, have we asked these guys the question about biannualizing these cuts? I don't think so.
Representative Wallace, Mr. Chairman, this is very similar to the Wyoming Business Council, where there's no mathematical issues with expansion of their reductions.
Steve.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, Diane, on the visitor centers and the North East Wyoming one up in between Sundance.
Crook and, County.
Yeah. It's in a beautiful location up on the hill. You can see it for miles. And anyway, what I was wondering, do you have some numbers on those out-of-state visitations to these new facilities, new one in Cheyenne, the new one in Crook County, compared to the old facilities? Do you keep that data on those folks? I think you do. And then kind of, I mean, I know, I'm sure there's local folks that come to see these. They're beautiful facilities. I'd like to think that we're seeing increased visitors. I'm sure we are. And then what's the plan for those old facilities? Are those turned over to state building, or what's happened to those?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, first of all, thank you for that. And we do track visitation at all of our centers, and we're looking at a more technical way of doing that. Right now it's done through clickers. But we know from week to week where we are. We have logins. We're now engaging through social media to have people engage with us at our visitor centers so that we can understand more about, you know, their source of origin. The most important thing that happens through visitor centers is our ability to drive people to more places. And we did, I think it was Senator Massey, who used to sit right here, would always ask us, you know, how do you know? We would quote statistics from a Michigan study or a Connecticut study. He said, how do you know what's happening in Wyoming? And so we actually did commission an independent study 2 years ago on travel behaviors from people. So they stopped at the Welcome Center. We gave them an email address, now got their email address, followed up with them 2 weeks after, and then found out, what did you do in Wyoming? Did you extend your length of stay? And the numbers are impressive, and I'd be happy to share an executive the highlights of that.
Yeah, one pager would be great.
Yeah, no, highlight. I can give it to you in a couple of bullets.
I mean, we've invested, obviously, those are huge capital investments, and we'd like to think they're paying off.
Exactly. And I'm convinced that the one that we just opened here in September in southeast Wyoming, that we're going to see a huge increase because, you know, one, the two fundamental rules of successful visitor centers are highly visible and easily accessible. And unfortunately, the other one that we were in, the facility that the Office of Tourism had been in since the 70s when it was constructed, through development, it was no longer, certainly wasn't highly accessible, and then it was really not visible at all. So I would anticipate as we go into the summer season, we'll see a large increase there.
So you'll get us that info. And then
absolutely.
And then so the last part of that was what's happened to those old facilities? Are they?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, Department of Transportation still has ownership of the one that we ran here. Mm-hmm. And I believe, and you'll have to ask Director Cox about it, but I believe that the plan is to turn that into driver's license services.
Okay. And then finally, last question, on the future plans, I mean, your strategic plan, where's the next Welcome Center? I mean, we had a lot of discussion on this Southern Wyoming, whether it should be on I-80 or I-25, but... What's the next plan?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Co-Chairman, you know, ultimately, yes. Ideally, there would be a state-of-the-art welcome center at the Wyoming-Nebraska border to welcome visitors who are coming in via I-80. The reason why we selected this I-25 northbound corridor when we did is because the number of non-commercial traffic on I-25 northbound is almost three times what it is on I-80. I-80 has a lot of commercial traffic. We also, if you recall, have had in the past, and it has not been approved, but have been requests for improvements and renovations to the facility at Bear River State Park and in Sheridan. And it's not to the outside of the building. It's more of the interactive and the exhibits, which are ways in which you can engage more with visitors.
Okay. We had a couple over here, Senator Perkins, and then we'll get Senator Meyer. Turn your mic on.
It comes into this. I was just wondering, what type of coordination is there with local lodging boards dealing with their lodging taxes? And are you? Is there any kind of coordination between your office and the local visitors bureaus with respect to lodging tax and making sure that we're getting the maximum bang for our buck out of those dollars as well?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we don't obviously have any authority over local lodging tax boards, and you know, we're not a regulatory agency over them. But what we have done, and which is part of our co-ops, our research co-ops, you know, we use research money in terms of building credibility, accountability for all the programs that we do. We use it as measurements to make sure that we're moving the meter the way we want them to. And part of when we initiated a research co-op program a few years ago was to give local lodging tax boards access to that same kind of information so that they could you know, do the same kind of analysis of their own marketing dollars. And the program has been very successful. We're seeing, you know, a lot of the local lodging tax boards take advantage of it and implementing the findings and are getting smarter, I think, with, you know, the use of how they use their dollars and the programs that they're developing through those research findings.
Dan, Diane, you might know this off the top of your head, but if not, I think staff could probably research it for me. I'm just kind of curious what your biennium budgets have been, you know, from 2000 on, kind of get an idea of mostly in your 900 series, because that's pretty much what you do is just contract for advertising and different programs. And I'm just wondering how that's basically changed from 2000 to today. Has it doubled? Is it less than doubled? Or
Mr. Chairman and Senator Meyer, it has doubled, and the majority of it has been in the advertising and outreach. And we've you know, been able to add. When I started in 2003, this office didn't do any television advertising. We also didn't have any photography on any of our print campaigns because there wasn't money to go out and have photography. And so we've been able to, you know, add, obviously, those elements. We've been able to add markets that we would not normally have been in, Chicago being a primary major market that we went into. We have, you know, I mean, so I, those are the programs where the majority of the increase has come. And it's been very effective and allowed us to be a competitive player among other mountain states. I remember when we were here and we were talking about the advertising, requesting the advertising increase, I had a map and had Wyoming in the center, and I had all the states around us and the percentage of change of their budgets compared to ours. And we were by far the lowest at the time, with the exception of Nebraska. And today, you know, we're on an equal playing field. We're still a little less than what Colorado or Utah has, you know, but we're at least on an equal playing field, and that's been very important for driving a tourism economy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and yeah, just like take 2000 through 2000 today and just show us what that is.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, we will. We'll get that for you.
Drew.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just back to my just the coordination or co-ops with the local lodging tax boards. I'm just wondering, my concern is just trying to make sure, it comes down to this, are you aware of any statutory hurdles that would prevent your office from co-oping with local lodging tax boards to replace the proposed budget cut in the co-op contract services?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I'm just going to say no. I don't know. So, and I wouldn't want to speculate, on what that might be.
So you're not aware of any thing that would stop that, stop local lodging tax boards from co-oping and helping to fill the gap that would happen if the proposed budget recut were to take place?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, is your question if would they be able to replace that value? Is that what you were asking?
If they so chose.
Every year it changes with the amount of investments that we have for these co-ops. So I don't, we are doing it. We're doing co-op opportunities now. So, but there's not anything that's a requirement.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Diane, I just need some clarification. I think I missed something. You have a reduction of $1 million against a budget of $28 million, roughly. That's 3.5%. Where's the other 8%? Or the other 4.5%?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Burkhardt, what that is when we were given these reductions from the budget office, they took it on a one-year basis. And so this is based on what the... what would be that one year of 8%. And so if it goes on beyond that was the initial direction, was that we would base these reductions on fiscal year 14. And so that's where the basis of the budget is. So that 8% is one half of the $25 million. And then if these go forward, then obviously, this is on an annual basis of what we were looking at.
Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna wrap this up. I had two quick questions, Diane. The first thing is, when I looked at your 900 series, it's really, most of it goes to one firm, a Barnhart Communications. So what I want you to provide to the committee is, how you solicit that, the kind of contract you have. Is it specific? Is it outcomes based? Is it by the hour? I want to know how you do that,
okay. And
what the competition is. How do you justify, and how do you determine that they're the ones, and just that process you go through.
Sure.
I want to see what that is. The other thing is, and Senator Hastert was talking about the $9.44 return on investment. I'm an engineer and I understand what you did there, but you would have a return on the investment if there was no advertising, because people are still going to come to Wyoming and have local and state revenue. So I think you got to be careful when you talk about a number like that, if I'm understanding what you did.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what that is that's analysis of public money to public money. That is only an analysis of the investment that's made through the Wyoming Office of through the Wyoming Office of Tourism, through the state legislature, that funds all of our programs. So it's, personnel, it's advertising, it's everything, and it's comparing back to the tax dollars that are generated off of this industry. It's certainly
not...
Yeah,
but the tax dollars are generated off this industry because of a lot of other reasons.
Yeah.
I think you enhance it.
Yeah.
But to take all the credit, I think, is a stretch.
That was certainly not the implication, Mr. Chairman. It was only to say that, the investment that you're making in tourism does give you a return on investment. So
what you're really saying is tourism is important, and I totally agree, but
yeah. It
has a $9.44 return based on what you do plus other things that would happen anyway. That's a fair assessment. Okay. Anything else? Do you have an idea on what I don't think we need a call back. I think we've got some good information. Thank you. You're doing a great job. The NFR was super.
Yes.
Enjoyed that. Team Wyoming, it's really impressive. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, committee. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and then he took the $600,000 that somehow got lost in the shuffle. Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. Thanks again, Diane.
Thank you.
Let's see. I've got two conflicting schedules, Don. My computer shows we're supposed to do wildlife trust, but I got a piece of paper that said they're in the morning. They are in the morning.
Mr. Chairman, they are in the morning.
And so we have Game and Fish now, correct?
We do. I did ask that the Business Council remain. They submitted handout 107 for those of you, hard copy or electronic copy. This was a request that the committee made in December relative to the $5 million budget request of the governor for data centers. He didn't bring that up in his discussion, but I asked him to stick around if there were any questions on that $5 million.
Everybody understand what we're talking about? Yep, we all do. Anybody have any questions of Bob about it? No questions? Thanks for sticking around. Okay, Scott, floor is yours. John? We all know who you are, but identify yourself and let's talk about Game and Fish.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Scott Talbot. I'm the director of the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And today I have with me John Emmerich, who's the deputy director immediately to my right. I also have Rich Reinders, who is our chief fiscal officer, Meredith Wood, who is in our accounting section, and Mark Fowden, who is with our fisheries division, to help answer any questions that you may have. I would like to start off, Mr. Chairman, with our general fund budget. Wyoming Game and Fish Commission in 2005 was the first time we started receiving general fund dollars, and that was for capital construction. In 2006 through 2010, there were four additional programs that were added. That is the sage-grouse program, vet services program, the wolf program, and the aquatic invasive species program. Those programs were added to the Game and Fish Department general fund budget, as it was the direction of the legislature and the administration at that time that those programs benefited far more than just sportsmen, and they felt that those programs should be funded by the general fund. Currently, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department's budget consists of $70.5 million of commission-allocated dollars and $4.8 million per year, or $9.6 million of general fund dollars. The general fund budget in FY13, due to some reversions, was cut by 3.2% prior to any request by the governor or the legislature to cut that budget. For FY13, after the direction from the governor, the department cut that budget with commission approval and also presented those cuts to Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife. It was our proposal to cut our veterinary services program in the area of disease surveillance and at-will contract employees by $141,884. In addition to that, it was our proposal to cut sage-grouse planning, and this was primarily projects through the sage-grouse implementation team and the sage-grouse working groups by $207,544. The governor's recommendation on that was to reduce those 8% cuts to 4%, which would result in a $70,942 cut in the veterinary services program and a $103,772 cut in the sage-grouse program. The aquatic invasive species program is a program that was just initiated in full, if you will, last year, and that program is continuing to work to inspect watercraft and other conveyances at state lines and at lakeside, as we've done in the past, to prevent the introduction of aquatic invasives to the state of Wyoming, and certainly that's for the benefit of not only wildlife, but primarily industry, municipalities, and agriculture as well. The sensitive species program, certainly with the Endangered Species Act looming, there were no proposed cuts to that budget as well. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that covers the general fund allocation for the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, and I would certainly entertain any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Scott. Senator Dockstetter, this is one of yours. You want to lead it off?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting, though, you're saying in the last
well, a four-year period, 06 to 10, we added four major programs, right? Okay.
That's correct, Senator.
And we asked you to cut.
That's correct.
Okay. You anticipate there is one mention on page 5, lots of federal funding, and we don't know where they're going to go because they haven't balanced their budget yet, but how do you adjust your department to those loss of federal funds, and then if we ask you for those cuts as well, how do you anticipate dealing with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, those cuts are primarily in the area of brucellosis surveillance and chronic wasting disease, and if you look at the reversions in our budget, we've coordinated that with the governor so that we think we have that covered, and we have simply been reverting general fund dollars to offset that. We anticipate that those dollars will completely dry up and those reversions out of our vet services program will no longer come back to the general fund.
And, Mr. Chairman, we can live without those, so we just have to turn back to the state for those, or what?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we'll turn back to the state for those, and those are in the budget, but when those federal funds dry up, we'll be spending state dollars rather than federal dollars on those programs.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I may have a couple more later, but I'd like to hear some of the others.
Who's doing it at your house site? No. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I'm asking all the agencies that I've been assigned to is you list your performance measures as part of this document, but I'd appreciate a handout, one pager, whatever you can provide me that tells me how you're doing with those metrics that you've laid out to measure yourselves by in each one of those categories. Secondly, I have some other questions as well. Your agency is a bit unique in the fact that the majority of your budget is not something that we get to review in detail. So could you just give us sort of the history of how that came about and kind of the synopsis of how that actually functions from the commission's point of view?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, absolutely. I'll try not to go back too far. In the 1920s, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department was completely controlled by the legislature. And at that time, there were laws and regulations that required the legislature to pay damage to private property, and that process became quite cumbersome. And then in the 1930s, with the Pittman-Robertson Act and the Dingell-Johnson Act and the Federal Wildlife and Restoration Act in 1937 through 1939, the federal government started taxing firearms and fishing equipment and basically told the states that if they would allocate license fees to wildlife, that they would be eligible for this additional federal funding. And that currently equates to about 20% of our license revenue is matched by the federal government. And in 1937, the Wyoming legislature created they created the Game and Fish Commission, but in 1937, they turned that over to the Game and Fish Commission and asked the Game and Fish Commission to operate on license fees and this money that came from the Federal Wildlife Restoration Act beginning in 1937. Up until 2005, the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission operated only on those funds provided through license fees, federal aid in the form of Pittman-Robertson, Dingell-Johnson, and what private grants or donations that we receive. Currently, 80% of our budget consists, 60% of that is license fees, and 20% of that is federal aid from PR and DJA dollars. In addition to that, 15% of our budget now is from outside grants, whether those be private donations, SWIG grants through the federal government, that type of stuff. And we have very aggressively in the last 10 years sought outside funding. and that's increased from around $2 million to about $9 million now that come in from state wildlife grants, from Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, from those types. We partner with the Wyoming Natural Resources Trust, et cetera. So that's the history, if you will, of how we got to where we're at. And the funding model, the legislature turned the funds from licenses over to the commission, but maintained the control of the license fees and that way controlled the amount of money that goes to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, in a previous hearing, it was noted in the Parks and Rec hearing that they manage Medicine Lodge, which is owned by Game and Fish. And I made a note on my document here, and I wondered what real estate does the Game and Fish own? How is that operated? When was it first acquired? How was it purchased? Those kind of details, if you could provide those to us at some point.
Absolutely, and we can get that information to you. A short history is that many of those properties were donated or acquired by the Game and Fish Commission. The department doesn't hold title to those, but the commission does. And it totals about 412,000 acres statewide at this time. I might add that the Game and Fish Commission is the only state agency that pays property tax on the land that they acquire. But it's certainly managed for the benefit primarily of winter range for wildlife and access for hunters and fishermen.
Yeah, but you pay at productive value of the land, right? Not real estate value.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's correct.
Yeah. So you got another one?
I do, Mr. Chairman. And I'm assuming that you probably already have this document and can hand it to me pretty easily. But you know how much been aware that the agency owns or the commission? I'm not sure who, since there's kind of a difference that we were just made aware of. Things like heavy equipment and what those heavy equipment pieces are used for, where they're located. How they're handled and et cetera.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we can certainly get that information and provide it to you.
Okay, Senator Hastert, was that it? Oh, Sue, you got one more? Go ahead.
One more, and it kind of doubles back to my original question, and that is just in the process of the commission, can you describe how the commission, how much time does the commission devote to the development of your budget, kind of what the process is that they go through to determine because the majority of your budget is not something we get to look at. How does the commission handle that?
Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the commission budget, the department starts preparing a preliminary budget for the commission in December of each year. And we present that to the commission in an open public meeting during April of each year. That's a preliminary budget. By Wyoming state statute, the commission has to do final approval of the budget in the first month of the fiscal year, which is in July. So at a public meeting in July, the commission approves that budget with public input. That budget is posted on our website. It's available twice for public review, and the commission provides overall guidance and direction on how that budget would be presented. For example, last year we took a 3% cut on the commission budget. I hope that answers your questions. Are there any other details that you'd like me to go into on that?
Just one, and you mentioned that you did a 3% budget cut. When you provide stuff later, would you please kind of give us a history that includes...
Well, we've got that, Sue, and it's
okay,
a question
great.
I had, too, and I think that's what John provided. You have that, and what I wanted to be sure that we would do is, if you look at the budget overall, it's gone up like 65% in about 7 or 8 years, but a big part of that is things that we've asked them to do. So I had to break that down so we're able to determine what the growth really is of Game and Fish. not by what we mandated. And we can't be upset with them for stuff we told them to do, although we could be. But it wouldn't fly very far. Although maybe that's not a bad idea. Maybe we'll try that approach. Okay, we're going to go John, and then Ken, you had one next. So go ahead, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've probably got a few here.
I'll take your time.
And
the basketball game doesn't start till 8, Senator Hastert, just so you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Talbot, I'm going to apologize ahead of time for my crudeness in the way I'm going to state some of this, but you got to understand that some of these questions are going to be coming from folks in my workplace. And, you know, before the session started, I listed several issues of concern, and this is the one they kept coming back to. And you would have thought these, and this is where the crudeness comes in, they would have thought they'd been gut shot by asking for, that the Game and Fish is asking for increase in licensing. And some of the criticism, it's like, you know, what are they thinking? They're mismanaging the wildlife down in southwest Wyoming. And these are the kind of things that I come up against. But to get into, you know, and then things like, one of the specific questions, though, is what does it cost, or does it cost to Game and Fish for wolf management? I guess that would be my first question, in specific questions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, this is the first year that we've been engaged in the wolf management program. We have budgeted $608,000 for that program. Certainly, we are unsure what it's going to cost. We combined our trophy game management section, actually eliminated a mid-management position, and consolidated our grizzly bear, black bear, grizzly bear, and wolf management program into one section to make that as efficient and effective as possible because of the different workloads throughout the year. Of course, bears are hibernating during the wintertime, so conflicts don't occur, and wolves are most active in the wintertime as far as conflicts and management activities. So while we have, we think that we can actually run that program for about, it's $600,000 per biennium, about $300,000, combining that with our other programs. In addition to that, the legislature has set forth $125,000 for damage. We are going to be very close to the $125,000 this year for livestock damage caused by wolves. So I guess the answer to your question is we're working our way through that. I think we're going to have it covered, but when we get 1 year behind our belt, we'll be able to tell you. Certainly the monitoring of those animals and the radio collar efforts are going to be critical for us to meet our obligation to determine the number of packs and breeding pairs at the end of the year, and we are committed to doing that, and hopefully we'll be able to do that with the flight budgets that we have. Most of that work is done through aerial work, and that's quite expensive.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then, you know, on the justifications for increased in licensing fees, you know, for big game, for, you know, in-state, and then I noticed a substantial increase coming for out-of-state. And I'm assuming, if it's correct to say that, you know, you are the oversight for the Game and Fish, and you look into, you know, the number of personnel, the duties. Comment that I got is that someone ran across a biologist that was studying deer flies. And I think the, you know, and I'm, actually, you know, there's probably a good reason and importance for that. And I'm going to start encouraging people to, when they have questions like that, to call in and get an explanation for those kind of things. But your agency monitors all of the activities of the Game and Fish, so you would know basically when they have studies being done and, you know, what they're for and things like that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that is absolutely correct. And our personnel, both our wardens and our biologists, do participate in disease monitoring work for the benefit of beggar trophy game animals or whatever. Specifically, to answer your question regarding flies, if that was not in conjunction, we do a significant amount of work with Elaeophora, which is a bloodworm of moose, and also with chronic wasting disease and brucellosis as well. But I'm not aware that our personnel are directly related in any deer fly monitoring programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Esquivel, he's been waiting very patiently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Talbot, I was just kind of looking at your 600, 900 series, and the thing that sticks out to me is you do have a lot of money going to the University of Wyoming for grant and lab services, but then as I go down, I start seeing other colleges and universities outside the state of Wyoming. Is the university not able to meet all your needs within those lab services, and are we using some of our community colleges as well? Can they take up some of the slack?
Senator, in response to the question, certainly we do all the work that we can in state, and there are some very, very specific, highly technical aspects of the science that our people work and other things like sage-grouse mapping, that type of stuff that we need to go to different vendors with.
Can you give me, Mr. Chairman, give me a follow-up. What does South Dakota State University do for you?
Mr. Chairman, can I check this out? Do you know what that's about? Mr. Chairman, we will look at that and get back with you on that, okay?
Anything else, Ken? Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
Just got a question on that. I couldn't find it anywhere under special revenue, but the $2 million budget on aquatic invasive species, how much are the stamps bringing in? I couldn't find it anywhere. How far are we from making that an enterprise account where it pays for
stuff? Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's not an enterprise at this point, but I would ask Chief of Fisheries Mark Fowden to answer that, respond to that, please.
Thank you. Please identify yourself.
Mark Fowden, Chief of Fisheries, Wyoming Game Fish. Mr. Chairman, relating to that question, this year we had a banner year. Previous years we were bringing in about between $420,000 and $440,000. This year we brought in about $480,000. So it's still shy of being an enterprise account.
Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out where it is in your revenue that you presented in your budget, and I can't find it, nor can I find where it goes out the other side on expenditures. Yet in your total budget, you've represented to us that it's all inclusive.
Mr. Chairman,
you can find that out. Give it to us later,
a specific response.
Mr. Chairman, Richard Reinders, Chief Fiscal Officer, Wyoming Game and Fish. That revenue is in a special account and is appropriated through the general fund side of things. So the information you have in front of you there is expenses only. And so it didn't include the revenue that was brought in from AIS stickers, but is a part of the appropriations in the general fund budget under the other income or other revenue for expenditures.
Okay, I'm looking at something that says historic review of game and fish revenues. So you're telling me that is not really all your revenues. There's another pot of money somewhere else? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure what you're looking
well,
at.
Well, I'm looking at what you provided me, and revenues, and it's talking about your revenue received. It's got licenses, conservation, application, interest, federal, preference, access, and license recoupment. Then it's got other. So is it in other? Is that what you're saying? That could be where it is because it's about $2
million. It should be under that other, I believe.
And it goes up to about, this year it's now, it was $8.8 million in 11, and now it's down to $6.5.
Pardon, Mr. Chairman.
I say it was $8.8 million in fiscal year 11, and it's dropped down to $6.5 million in 12 and projected to go down to $5.5 million in 13. under other on your revenue streams. Just you can get that back to me and check in. And then the next question I had about that is why did it go down so substantially? And that if you could answer that too, please, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. We'll get that for
and,
you.
And if you have to find out when you leave, I can show you the chart that you. I'm just going off what you sent us, so I may be misinterpreting it, but I don't think so. Okay. Anybody? Oh, Brett.
Mr. Chairman, just a point. That specific unit on the general fund side, on the appropriated side, is not going to be reflected in the budget document that you have because it was not subject to any cuts or any changes. So it doesn't print when we print.
I'm not talking about the budget document, though. I'm talking about their budget they submitted
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
So just a note, typically it will show up here in the entire budget document that's printed, but because there were no changes, no proposed reductions, you don't get to see the breakout. If you go to page 3, you'll see it included in the summary, but you can't break the specific revenue number out with respect to that summary.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is we're just trying to get a good understanding of what goes in, what goes out, what we've asked you to do, and we're not expecting, you know, just so we get a better feel. Am I right, committee? I think that's the information we want back, and kind of ties into what Senator Hastert and I think Representative Esquivel and Representative Wallace are talking about. So, Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Talbot, just trying to, I'm trying to interpret between what you guys recommended in the Gov's rec, and looking at, I'm looking on page 11 of the budget document. You talk about a $77,000 reduction in costs related to trapping and materials. It's there under paragraph basic description of budget reductions. And I was trying to see, and I couldn't track whether that was reflected in the cuts that the governor actually recommended or not.
Mr. Scott? Chairman, Representative, that $77,000 was for the testing of elk and the test and slaughter program that we eliminated, and that is reflected in, I believe that is reflected in the governor's cuts.
Looking up on page, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, following up on that, looking on page 7 where there's the summary of the reductions, do you know in where in that summary that $77,000 would be reflected in the governor's recs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know where that is, but we did cut those brucellosis surveillance funds, and the governor recommended cutting back on the personnel and the supplies that go with that. We've worked very closely with the Wyoming Livestock Board on the designated surveillance area, and we have reduced the amount of brucellosis surveillance within the designated surveillance area and have focused those efforts in conjunction with them around that the outer boundary of that to monitor the spread and prevalence of that disease outside of the feed grounds primarily.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nicholas, your first question. We're waiting patiently for you. You're on.
I have a question about the reduction in the sage-grouse planting and protection. And with regards to that, you recommended or suggested $207,000, and the governor had $103,000. What I'd like to know is what that is going to what you're using the funds for, what's going to happen because of the reduction, what you're reducing, and if that's going to have any impact on the status of the current litigation involving the blue grouse issues, and if that's going to be an ongoing issue, is that going to be used as a weapon against us in the current litigation regarding delisting or the listing of the sage grouse?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the sage grouse working groups throughout the state, I believe there's 8 of them, initiate a number of sage grouse projects. That is habitat projects, research projects, et cetera. In the last several years, due to the fact that they have been working on so many projects, they've actually gotten behind, and there's a fair amount of money that's been encumbered there, about $750,000. And we were reverting about $170,000 a year. And that recommendation, that 8%, was recommended so that we could spend some of those encumbered dollars. And in discussion with the governor's office, they understood those encumbrances, but shared concerns very similar to what you just voiced and asked us to keep that foundation there and continue to work with those groups to spend those money on the ground sage grouse projects to support our commitment to sage grouse conservation.
Anybody else? Anything else? You, John, would you like to add anything, or Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I have nothing further.
You know, one thing I would say, and I think what you can tell by the questions that, you know, I don't think it's a matter we all appreciate, and it's a wonderful thing we have in Wyoming with our wildlife, but we see there's some problems out there. And a lot of them are not anything that had to do with you or your job as managing. And what it really is, and Senator Meyer and I were talking about it, we just have fewer people hunting. And they're not buying licenses. And a lot of it's related to the bears and up in northwestern Wyoming and the wolves and all that. But it's just kind of a pervasive thing that's happening with young people today. And they just aren't out hunting. Like when I was a kid, everybody always went hunting, and you just don't see that anymore. So I think, you know, of course it's travel and rec, but that's something that all of us are concerned about. How do we get more young people interested in hunting so we can have more licenses purchased, so you don't have to come back for these fee increases? And I don't know what the legislature is going to do with your fee increase. If they turn it down, I don't know what you're going to do. I know none of it's a very good answer, but I think if we just have to somehow get these young people involved, and I know you're thinking about that all the time. And so I guess mine is more of an editorial comment, and I know you agree. No, but it's a real deal, and they're just not wanting to hunt. And I see that in my family. I see it in my, you know, we've tried to do that. I've hunted all my life, started when I was, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old. It's just different now, so I'm sure you're looking at that.
Senator, we are looking at that, and I certainly appreciate your comments. The commission and the department have invested a significant amount of time and effort in recruiting young hunters and maintaining the hunters that we have. And certainly in our license fee proposals, we have recommended no changes for youth licenses so that those prices will not go up. It is encouraging through the special hunts that we have, the special licenses that we've set aside, that the latest survey from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a nationwide basis indicates that new hunters have increased by 9%, and there's been an 11% increase by fishermen.
Increase.
So that's the first.
You're trusting U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
I would say that's the first positive indication that we've seen in many years on that. And we as the state certainly hope that some of our efforts to recruit hunters, whether it be youth camps or youth hunts, the Hunter Mentor Program and those types of things, are starting to make a difference there. Do those figures directly apply to Wyoming? No, they don't. But nationwide, hopefully some of the programs like archery in the schools and those types of things are starting to make a difference. As far as non-residents go, we still see a strong demand from non-residents to participate in hunting.
And you can find that out, too, in your licenses because they ask for the age, and that would take a lot of work, and I don't know if it would help you, but it's just a feeling that I have. And so did you have one more, Senator Hastert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noted there's plenty of time for the
game. There's plenty of time.
just real quick on grizzly bears. Are you managing those? Do you have a real? I mean, I'm hearing more and more of issues with grizzly bears, sightings, incidents with people. Many feel that there's not really a good handle on how many grizzly bears may be delisting. Can you give me some thoughts on grizzly bears?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Senator, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department has been very actively engaged in grizzly bear management since they were listed in the early 70s. The department currently conducts all of the monitoring activities and all of the conflict activities for grizzly bears in Wyoming. As perceived by your constituents, those have increased significantly in the last 30 years. Grizzly bear abundance and distribution in the state of Wyoming has expanded beyond those areas where we committed to the public in our grizzly bear management plan that we drafted in the early 2000s for delisting. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has worked very closely with us through both the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee and the Yellowstone Ecosystem Subcommittee to address grizzly bear management issues. Specifically, there was a lawsuit filed when grizzly bears were delisted for a very short window, and the significant issue that the courts held that we needed to continue working on is a white bark pine assessment. We have been pooling our resources with the USGS and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and hopefully we will have an answer to that question to provide to the court by the end of this year. And our latest commitment from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is that a delisting petition will be published not later than October of 2014. Hopefully they will stick to that.
You know, the thing that and just an observation, too, is we did it with the wolves, and they come out with so many pairs, breeding pairs, and that's what they start here. They did it with the grizzly bears, and I think the number was we thought we had 400, we wanted 600. Now we're talking about the sage grouse, and that number is like you want to see your batting average, it goes up. And that number is so phony that they provide to us what they're looking for their levels of game management. And then we get sucked into it, and then all of a sudden now we've got, you know, they tell us one number of bears. I think you guys got another number, and I'm not going to ask you in public what that number is, but they're different. And so we get sucked into this, and we have a bear population that's twice the level that they wanted in the first place. Same happened with the wolves, and I worried about the same thing happened with the sage grouse. And we seem to get sucked into all these deals, and the ones that hurt are you and the job you're trying to do, the people in Wyoming who want to appreciate these resources we have, and it's all being dictated by out of state. So anytime we get into these discussions, when they start talking about numbers, you know, we need to hold them to what they ask us to do, instead of it's such a moving target, and then here we are stuck with it after the fact, and administrations change and all this, and yet it's there for you to have to deal with, and you've got enough on your plate, and yet here it comes, and there we sit. So, and I don't know what we can do about that legislatively from our perspective, but if there's things we can do, I think this is one guy that's in on that, because I'm fed up with these moving targets, and they always go up, and then there's no money there to support it, they don't care what the impacts are, and we have to deal with it.
Senator, we're certainly doing our best to work with them to delist grizzly bears. We feel that grizzly bears certainly are to a level where they should be managed by the states.
That's a nice answer for what I just said. Okay.
Last one.
What? Last one.
Last one. And Mr. Chairman, I am going to defer to you to whether or not this is a fair question, but I was wondering if they had an opinion on silencers and hunting.
You know, this is the Appropriations Committee. I think everything's on the table unless you don't want to answer it. But you can sure say you have no opinion, but it's up to you.
Mr. Chairman, certainly there are two sides of the silencer issue.
That's a good start.
And I think that you have heard them both.
You want to leave it there? There's two sides?
That's
fine. Yeah, we always support our friends. That's Don.
Mr. Chairman, no biennialization issues here, but I did want to bring to your attention on page 11 of the governor's rec on this. He does reduce an AWEC by one, and that was not carried through on the table on page 13. So on page 13, column 6, you need to show a negative one on the AWEC line. Just a minor technical correction.
Do you concur with that, John or Scott?
Mr. Okay. Chairman, that's correct.
That's correct. Anything else, Don? Would you repeat that, please, Don, for Drew?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, on page 11, at the bottom of the page, it shows the governor's recommendation, and in it he indicates he is elected to reduce an AWEC position for a period of 12 months. That recommendation did not follow through to page 13, column 6. The second to last line, he has a zero there, and it should have a negative one.
Everybody got that? Dan, you got that? Okay. Anything else, committee? John, Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And thanks for getting those numbers together for me, too. They're really helpful. I appreciate that.
And we'll get the rest of the information requested as quickly
appreciate
as we
it.
Can. Thank you very much.
Tell Richard how he did a good job for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, committee. Mr. Co-Chair, since you're going to be running tomorrow, why don't we just start you running at 4:55, and you got some things you want to go over before tomorrow?
I think it was a great pace today, Mr. Chairman. Man, yeah. I think it's a great lineup here today. Looking ahead to tomorrow, I guess, is there any – we'll probably meet here, co-chairs, for a few minutes, but is there anything, staff, anything? What do you have, Brett?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, just a couple of things, if I could highlight for the committee. Earlier today, there were 8 governor's letters that were delivered. They should have been, and I believe have been, distributed to all the committee members. I don't know if at some point in time you would like to spend any time reviewing those, but I'm available to do that, obviously, anytime that you wish to do that. Secondly, I provided a handout following some of the conversations this morning with respect to the biennialization question and some of the questions that seem to have come up about the reductions, and it's handout number 140. It's a multiple column, 2-page sheet that looks like this. I believe it's also been distributed. And at some point in time, if possible, if it's the chairman's wish, I'd like to go through that with the committee as well, just to walk you through the document and show you how it works. I believe it gets to the heart of the questions related to the governor's recommendations on reductions.
Yeah, Senator Meyer?
Yeah. Brent, in the future, could you put those governor's letters on a 3-hole paper so we can put them in a notebook? That'd make it easier than everybody punching them. And I do want to talk to you a little bit about his salary thing. And I recall when we were doing the rebalancing for the staff of the judges and stuff, that number was like 655 about 3 years ago, and you're down to 255. Probably some discussion about that, whether that 255 number's enough to do what I had thought the governor said, that he was going to bring everybody up in. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, yes, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I believe the 650 or 655 in that ballpark was actually their request that they submitted last year as part of their biennial budget submission. And so certainly we can talk about the methodology in terms of how all of the numbers in that particular governor's letter, the distribution between the various entities that are affected by the governor's recommendation. We can certainly go over how that was calculated and how that determination was made.
Yeah, and along that same line, too, and I just need some backup, is to there was, when we did the last salary increase, the judicial branch was to be included for the tune of $600,000, but it was to be administrated by the governor. There was a constitutional issue. The governor vetoed the part about him administrating, but the money stayed there and went to the executive branch, I've been told. Could you help clarify that? Did it go to the executive branch, and was it, in fact, used then for executive branch salaries, or did it revert back? And just if you could dig that out for me, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that now, or if you prefer
now.
To cover that all at the same time. Obviously, I was not here at the time. I didn't occupy the current position I'm in at the time that veto occurred. I am familiar with what you're referring to. The net effect of that veto was for those dollars to go to the executive branch. I can tell you, in evaluating distribution of those funds, which represented the 91% of market for executive branch employees last spring, We essentially went through a process with agencies at the budget division and ultimately with the governor's blessing, went through a process with them to require them to show us that they needed those dollars before we distributed the funding. and we did distribute that funding via B11. And we evaluated we did our own separate evaluation of every single agency's fiscal position, and required them to essentially show us that they required any part of, I think it was just shy of about $7.8 million total. We did not distribute all of those dollars. To my knowledge, they have not yet reverted. Essentially, and I can't tell you, I've got the B11 that I could certainly provide you that shows you how much of that funding was distributed and how much would continue to reside in that appropriation. But essentially, there's several million dollars left in terms of that specific appropriation still residing and unused.
I guess what we're looking for is, and I'm sure that the analogy you went through to justify is appropriate, and I'm not going there. I just, you know, when the legislature dealt that, and it was to go to the judicial branch, we expected it to be there, and I think the veto is probably appropriate. But now if there's money there that has not been utilized, you don't think you might, rather than revert, that might be something we could have on the table to try to rectify something we committed to 2 years ago. You know, and they're coming back, and now, and they're trying to get back up, and that just might be something we might be able to clean up, particularly if you have the money there. But, you know, that's certainly already been appropriated. It's already been done, and just to give us, you know, to think about that one.
And, Mr. Chairman, I guess the other thing I wanted to say with respect to our distribution, I understand you're not necessarily wanting to know the specifics of that, but what allowed a lot of that appropriation to remain, you may recall, was the rate holiday that occurred during the 11-12 session, and that's the reason we initiated the process we did, because we knew the rate holiday money was out residing in the agency budget still, and so that's the reason we initiated the process we did. We knew they had the spending authority already as a result of that, and so we knew we did not want to distribute a significant portion of that $7.8 million. But certainly, I can get you additional specifics on that particular appropriation if you'd like.
Well, and that's something for this committee to think about if we want to go ahead and move that back to the courts, because that clearly they make a good argument. So think about and tell me why we're wrong in not doing that, I guess, if you've got some kind of a justification. Yeah, we might think about that. Okay, on these governor's letters, let's all review them and think about them, and maybe if Chairman Harshman wants to talk about them tomorrow, I don't know procedurally how you want to do that, Steve, but whatever.
Yeah.
And
I think there's some time to look at it.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, if at all possible, if we could go through this document, I think it would be very helpful to the committee just to understand how, from the budget division's perspective, we view the current reductions, how they work in concert with the 15, 16, 8% that's going to be required of agencies.
Sure.
I just think at some point in time it'd be helpful for us to review.
What do you all want to do, committee? Why don't we look at it, and then tomorrow maybe Steve, first thing, because one of the things that I want to be sure and be able to know is how much of the budget reductions are not biannualized and what's going to be the impact, and I want to know that number. And we've tried to do it with Dawn, and we've got different numbers out there. We talked about it the other day. And if this goes towards helping us with that, then Dawn can review this. If you had a chance to really look at this, Dawn, and maybe you can look at it, and we can come together and see if we're in agreement on what it does and where that number really is. I'd like to zero in on that number, what that number is. And that's what this is going to start is doing, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes, but I will tell you that Don and I have traded some information with respect to how we view the mechanics of this working, and there is a disconnect there. We look at this a little bit differently, I think, than LSO Fiscal, and I guess I'll leave it at that. He did share earlier today his perspective on a very similar chart to this.
Okay. Anything else, committee?
Is the Senate coming in? Are you guys coming in at 11 tomorrow or 10? Or
10.
10. See, we're at 11 on the House. Was a block of time, but we'll work.
Wait
some
a
time.
Minute. What are we doing coming in at 10 if we're coming in at 11? You want to still do it at, we're at 8?
Yeah, we'll go at 8, but we'll work in some time tomorrow maybe then to discuss these. I was just inquiring about your start time, so. It's 8 as far as. Why would it count?
Eight.
It's 8, isn't it?
Ron, what's your calendar say? I thought it was 8 o'clock.
I don't have tomorrow. It's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
And we have tomorrow's schedule ready. Maybe we'll distribute that. And... Okay.
8 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
Okay, good day. We're adjourned. You and me, and Drew's going, right, Drew? Drew's going to the game. Who else is going? Kurt's going.